We'll begin our class the way we always begin, with a quick overview of the parsha. This year, Tazria and Metzora go together, these two parshiot. Our parsha begins with a focus on a woman giving birth and the spiritual defilement, the tumah that she has after giving birth. If it's a boy, so then we have the mitzvah of circumcising on the eighth day. She is spiritually defiled for 7 days, and then for 33 days she's pure. And if it's a girl, she's tameh, spiritually defiled, for 14 days, and then pure for 66 days. And then she brings her sacrifice, and she's completely pure. And then the parasha focuses on some kind of white blemish that can appear in the skin that has this spiritual tumah, the spiritual defilement called tzaras. And the Torah gives us special laws that the Kohen is the one that decides when it's pure, when it's impure. I just want to make a note. If I use any word that you're unfamiliar with, please tell me. Tell me, don't be embarrassed. I try to translate most words. So the Kohen sees, and the Torah gives us criterion. The Kohen sees the type of white blemish, if the hair has turned white. Sometimes the Kohen will declare it defiled right away. Sometimes the Kohen will say, we have to pause for a week, stay in enclosed for a week, and then we'll look it over again. And then the parsha describes that you could have sometimes a blemish within a blemish, and sometimes there could be a blemish in a beard or in the hair of the head, and then it's the hair turns yellow if the hair was black, and again, that has its own laws. Again, we check if it spread over time, if it didn't spread over time. The Torah tells us what happens if a person goes bald. So then the skin on his head is like regular skin. Then we don't say there has to be hair that has to change color, but rather we treat it like regular tzaras. What happens, what does a person who has tzaras have to do? He has to behave like a person in mourning. We know a person in mourning tears his clothing. He has to tear his clothing. He has to cover his face. He has to walk around as though he's in mourning, stay out of the camps, and warn everyone, I'm defiled, stay away. He has to sit alone out of the camp. Then the Torah tells us the laws of tzaras in a garment, that a person can have a blemish appear in a garment, and then the Kohen again will examine it, and if it fits certain criterion, the whole garment will have to be burnt. Sometimes we'll put the garment away for a week and see what happens. If it spreads, it doesn't spread, it turns, comes back, doesn't come back. Sometimes you'll have to cut out the blemish, and sometimes, no, the whole garment will have to be burned. And that's the end of Parshas Tazria. Parshas Metzora tells us, after the person has the blemish, and then the blemish leaves, what's the procedure for becoming completely pure? The Torah describes two birds. One is sent out over the field, the other one is slaughtered, and the whole procession where we dip in the blood and sprinkle on the person, and then he brings a sacrifice, and some of the oil is placed on the palm of his hand and on his earlobe, and the sacrifice that's brought until he's finally pure. The Torah tells us, depending on his financial situation, he can bring a more expensive or a cheaper sacrifice. The Torah finishes basically Parshas Metzora telling us that one can have a blemish in the home, and then sometimes they'll have to take out part of the wool, and sometimes the whole house will have to be broken down because of this blemish. The house can be defiled, and then when the house becomes pure again, you have a special sacrifice for the purification of the home. The parsha concludes with the laws of Zav and Zava. A man or a woman that has some kind of flow, or at the very end we have the laws of a woman's period and the laws of a man who emitted sperm and their spiritual defilement. So we will actually begin our focus tonight with what Parshas Metzora concludes. Because from there we can come back to everything. Everything else in our day and age is less relevant. The only thing that's really relevant to us today are the laws and then the Parshas Metzora, the laws of family purity. We have to know, first of all, as an introduction, that the Torah reveals to us that there are levels of purity and impurity that we don't understand. The Torah says when a person dies, so he's impure. And he's so impure that anything that's under the same canopy as he is becomes tameh, has this spiritual defilement. You'll ask me, what is it? I'll tell you, I don't know. Maimonides and the Guide for the Perplexed has one understanding. The Kuzari has another understanding. The Kabbalists have a third understanding. And maybe they all really work together. I'm not sure that it's so important to understand philosophically how it works. We could say that it's connected to death, that it's connected to the angel of death, that death goes back to the angel of death, who was the Satan, who was riding on the serpent's back, who deceived Eve, who, according to the Medrash, had relations with Eve, who caused Eve's whole physiological nature to change, and that's why women have certain capacity for defilement that they didn't have before Eve's sin, and that's why when she gives birth and when she has her period, she has certain defilement which goes back to the sin back with Eve and the serpent. However, we'll understand it isn't so relevant because these are all philosophical understandings. What's more important, I think, is to understand throughout the Shas you will encounter these concepts. These are concepts in the Torah. These are biblical concepts. A kohen is not allowed to enter a graveyard because we say all of the deceased in a Jewish graveyard, any canopy that they're under, the tumah spreads under that canopy. So tumah is a concept that has biblical applications. We don't go up to the Temple Mount because we are all tameh. We're all spiritually defiled. It's not something that we can see. It's something that the Torah reveals to us exists. So let's take it at that and then just understand how to apply the concept. The philosophical applications of where exactly it comes from, I think we can just understand that it's something that pertains to death, pertains to the angel of death. Chazal tell us when a person dies, so the angel of death sticks his sword in that person, and that's how he, so to speak, takes out the neshama, but puts in a drop of blood or a drop of poison or whatever you'll call it, spiritual defilement into that person. And the angel of death is the same angel that was seducing Adam and Eve and caused the sin with the forbidden fruit. And he was able, as Chazal say, he was able to place some of that defilement within the woman. And that automatically affects all her children for future generations. That affects us men too. We're all descendants of Adam and Eve. So there is, we can view it as the way some quote from the Kabbalists, the holiness, which is the godliness, which is the human being, prevents this spiritual defilement from enveloping us. Meaning at any given moment, there's always a pull downwards, like gravity. There's always a pull for a person being tameh. But we're not tameh because we have tzelem Elohim. We discussed this medrash that at any time a person wakes up, there are so many, call them bad angels, ready to pounce on him. But every one of us has an angel up above that says, that's a representation of God walking down there, stay away from him. Make way. That's godliness walking on planet Earth. And that godliness that is within us is what has potential for kedusha, for holiness, and what keeps us at status quo. When a person dies, so he loses his neshama, and then he goes back down to the default of tumah. We could say that. You'll notice that I'm saying things that are different. I mean, there are nuances of differences, but they all work together on some level, these different understandings. When a person sleeps, he is less conscious. His neshama goes up to report what he's done all day. So then we say that the spiritual defilement does land on a person. Yeah, every time a person sleeps, Chazal tells us sleep is 1/60th of death. We wake up in the morning, it's all got to leave, but it remains on our fingernails. So we wash nagel vaser. We wash in the morning, nagel is nails, right? We wash off our nails, we wash off our hands to remove the remnants of the defilement we had during the night. Okay, so however we'll understand that. There is this spiritual concept that there are different levels of tum'ah. Tum'ah is spiritual defilement. There are different levels, and different levels require different actions to remove them. And we have a whole order, 1/6 of Shas focuses on this, on the laws of defilement. We have Seder Taharot, right? We have 6 orders in Shas Mishnayos, and there's a whole order of purity. Aside from the laws of the sacrifices, we have a whole order, Seder Taharot, that focuses on these laws, the laws of vessels, the laws of tents, the laws of the deceased. You have a whole tractate that focuses on the little bit of a branch that you take off with the fruit. Right? You have the apple, and then you have the little bit that comes out of the top. What's that called?
Stem.
It's called the stem in an apple. Okay. So you have a whole... The last tractate in Shas is called Uktzin. Uktzin focuses, when do you look at that stem as part of the fruit and when not? Seems like a trivial point, right? Look at it. It's only 3 chapters long. But it is the last tractate in Shas. Chazal had it down to a T, down to the stem. When is the stem considered part of the fruit? Because fruit have one type of defilement. And when is it like a tree, like part of the wood that's on the tree? And then it doesn't get that. What happens if you pickle it? You know, you have a pickle sometimes with the stem. Then does the stem take on the laws of the pickle or not? You know, all these things are Chazal went into. We're not learning all of Taharis now, but we have to know that this concept exists. For our day and age, this is almost irrelevant. We're not bringing sacrifices. We're all Tameh, the worst Tumah, we're Tameh Mit. So for all intents and purposes, there's very little that pertains to us. Chazal tell us that there are two Tum'ot, two types of spiritual defilement that, so to speak, overtake Tumat Mit. And those are tum'ah hayotzet alav migufu, defilement that comes from within. Every other defilement is from without. You're in the same room as a dead body, so you become defiled. That's external, right? You touch someone, that's tameh. That's external. But there are two tumot that come from within. One is tumat tzara'at, the tumah in our parsha of tzara'as, where a person actually has a blemish that comes out from within. And the other is the tumah that flows from a person's body. What at the end of the parsha, be it the woman's period, be it the man emitting sperm, be it the man having a flow which is not sperm, be it the woman having a flow which is not her period, those are tumot that come from within the body. And those, there are aspects where those tumot are more severe than other tumot because they come from within. Tzara'as, we don't know what it is today. We don't really have a picture on that. You have to have tradition. Which type of white blemish? We don't have that anymore. But the other tumah of a woman's period or a man emitting sperm, we know what that is, right? So those tumot, we do know what they are. And they can have relevance in a few ways. One is, if you want to go up to the Temple Mount. So there are areas on the Temple Mount, there are areas where technically you could go in even though you're Tameh Mit, but you could not go in if you have a Tumah that comes from within. Meaning if a person were a Zav, let's say he had some kind of flow, and we don't know exactly what that flow is, we'll describe it in a minute, then he couldn't go up even to the places where a person who's Tameh Mit could go up. So that's where it might have some halachic relevance. Those of you who think of taking tours up on the Temple Mount and you say, the guide knows where the Holy of Holies is, I won't go there. That's a good question. Does he really know? And you'll say, I won't go to the places where I'm forbidden, but wait, do you know if you've had that flow? And have you followed how you're supposed to become pure from that before you go up? That's another question you have to ask yourself. So that's one area where it's relevant. And the other area that's most relevant, it's relevant to all of married life, is that when a woman has her period, so then there is a biblical prohibition to have relations with the woman and any other type of closeness until she becomes pure from that defilement. So even though technically we're always defiled tameh mit, and that's the most stringent tumah, there is a level of tumah, there is a level of defilement which we can get rid of. And the Torah says that a person is biblically prohibited from having any closeness with a woman, any intimacy, and it's not only relations, it includes other forms of intimacy, with a woman who has had her period and has not yet gone to mikvah. And it's not as simple as that, as we will see in a few minutes. But first, yes, Boaz.
I just want to know, is there a prohibition against getting a Leah to carry?
No.
Mm-hmm.
person who emitted sperm can get an aliyah, kadavin can do everything. He should just cleanse himself beforehand, you know. The person should take a shower or take a fresh wipe. He should be clean. You don't have to go to mikveh before you get an aliyah. Not at all. Okay, so let's begin with what's most relevant for us today. The laws of family purity. So the Torah breaks down a woman's defilement into two. The Torah describes a woman's period at the time when she's expecting it and when she's not expecting it. Meaning every woman has some kind of cycle. In Chazal's time, up until about 500 years ago, a woman's cycle was so accurate, she'd know down to the minute when she was getting her period. Their lives were very orderly. Their diet was very orderly. And so their periods were very orderly. A woman would know, on the 3rd of every month, at 3:30 a.m., I get my period. And she never had to worry that it was coming any other time. She'd know down to the T. Some women had it based on the day of the month, going by the lunar cycle. Some women had it based on every 30 days, every 28 days, she'd have her period. But they knew down to the minute. Down to the minute. And sometimes even closer than that. Today, 1 in 1,000, 1 in 5,000 women are like that. Most women are not like that. Today a woman can have a period after 28 days, and her next period after 22 days, and her next period after 35 days, and they never know. They always have to carry around tampons and stuff, right? Because they don't know. They don't know when they're going to have their period. This has certain halachic ramifications, but we're going to begin with the prototypical woman up until 500 years ago, from the time the Torah was given up until about 500 years ago, or maybe even 300 years ago, or maybe even 200 years ago. It's not clear when the change really happened. We see in halachic works, from the halachic works, we see more and more discussion of women who don't have a set period. So we see more and more that this was happening. It's not something that, you know, medical research wasn't keeping track so much. But from the halachic works, we get a feel. There's another point we should know that changed in the last 150 years, and that is that from the time the Torah was given up until about 150 years ago, women were very in tune with their body. When a woman got her period, she'd know it. She'd have an internal pain that was so strong that she'd wake up in the middle of the night from that pain that her period started, that her womb opened and she started menstruating. Today, a woman doesn't know the difference. 99.99% of women. Again, 1 in 1,000 senses it. Most women don't know when their period starts, and that has, again, that has relevance. Those are two changes. So first, let's understand biologically what happens. Hashem created a woman that every month from the time after puberty, she has potential to have a child. Every month, let's start the month, let's say Rosh Chodesh. Today is Rosh Chodesh. Iyar, Aleph, Iyar tonight. Let's say Aleph Iyar, a woman has her period. So she has her period for, let's say, 6 days. She menstruates, which basically, we'll get back to what that means. And then she stops seeing blood, and after 6-7 days, we go down to next month, 30 days from now. She menstruates again. Again, she has her period. If she menstruates in 30 days, that's an indicator the 14 to 16 days earlier, 14 to 16 days before she menstruates, what happens is that her ovaries emit an egg into the womb. And that egg is about the size of a kernel of sugar. Tiny. But that egg comes through her fallopian tubes from the ovary into her womb, into her stomach, right? The ovary, the womb is about the size of your fist before a baby develops inside. And in there, there's 36 hours approximately where the egg is alive. And if it is fertilized by sperm, so then it will develop into a baby. If the woman had her period today, so she has her period today and for another 6 days, and then directly afterwards, the body starts working on making linings of blood and different fluids so that in about 12 to 14 days, remember, if her whole period is 30 days, and 14 to 16 days before her period, she has ovulation. That's when the egg comes into from the ovaries into the womb. So then that means approximately 16 days from now is when the egg is going to come in. So for the next 2 weeks, after for about 2 weeks after her period, The body is busy preparing blood and fluids to accept that egg, which can develop into a baby, and then that blood and those fluids are going to support that baby in the womb. What happens if she's not married? She's 13 years old. So then, let's go down 2 weeks from now. 2 weeks down the road, nothing happens. The egg comes in. She doesn't sense it. It stays alive for 36 hours. Nothing happens. And then the body sends a message to itself, nothing doing this month. And then it spends the next 12 to 14 days preparing to decompose. And then all the blood that was prepared and all the linings that were prepared for a baby come out of her when her period begins. That's the blood that a woman sees in her period. So that's just a quick scientific understanding of what happens at the period. That's scientific. Now to the halachic. Let's say a woman has a set period. So what happens again, let's say her period starts today, is that that's when the lining starts decomposing. She sees that blood is flowing out of her. The halacha says, at her set period, our parsha says, she becomes tameh. The second a woman senses that her womb is opened, remember, the womb is held closed. It's held closed so that if there's going to be a baby developed inside, the baby ain't going to fall out, right? And it also prevents germs from coming in. And when she menstruates, then the womb opens. That opening of the womb is the beginning of the period halachically. And that is what women always used to sense up until the last 100, 150 years. That opening of the womb. And that indication, that feeling, my period is starting, that's when biblically she becomes tameh. A few seconds later, the blood starts flowing out. But the opening of the womb is really what interests us. The blood starts flowing out, she becomes tameh. She becomes tameh, so biblically anything she touches is tameh, anything she sits on is tameh, anything she lies on is tameh. And it goes so far as that if she's lying on a bed, and there are 20 sheets on the bed, she's Queen Elizabeth, all 20 sheets become tameh. Mishkav, Moshav, Merkav, anything she leans on, as we'll see in a minute. So she becomes tameh. Now, from that moment onward, most women menstruate for approximately 6 days. If you consider the way it begins by most women is they start staining and then they have their full-fledged period and then it ends up with a trickle. Some women start like Niagara. 1 second, it's all flowing out. But most women are not that way. So she has 5 or 6 days where she has her period and then she's clean. Technically, biblically, the minute her period started on time, for the next 7 days, she's defiled. I don't care if she saw 1 day's worth of blood. Some women could see the whole period in 1 day. She could be clean for 6 days afterwards. Or if her period took her 6.5 days, meaning if her period started tonight, or are we Wednesday night? So her period started tonight, so Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 7 days. Today was the first day. Next week, Tuesday, is going to be the seventh day. No, tonight is already Thursday, right? So next week, Wednesday, is going to be the seventh day. Let's say next week Wednesday, Shkia now is 7:10. Next week Wednesday, she's menstruating, Niagara's coming out of her, till 6:55, till 7:02. 7:02, she goes into the shower, comes out of the shower, 7:05, 5 minutes, she sees the ball of the sun, she sees I'm clean. Torah says she takes a cloth, she checks herself, she inserts the cloth into herself, wipes around, looks at the cloth, clean, I'm clean, says the Torah, go to mikveh. She dumps in herself into the mikveh, comes out, sunset, pure. Torah says, from the minute she has her period, I don't care if she has it for 1 day or 6 days or 6.5 days, up to the seventh day, to the end of the seventh day, that's her normal period. We don't care how much she saw, then she's defiled. Tumat nida. Then she goes to mikveh that seventh day, and then she's tahor, pure. That's biblical. Now, after she becomes pure, she has 11 days during which we say, let's say she saw spotting, meaning she went to mikveh next week, Wednesday night, the night between Wednesday and Thursday, right? She went to mikveh, and she's pure. And then, come Thursday morning, she wakes up, she feels something, she looks, and she sees something came out of her, a little bit of blood came out. Now she's already had a flow. That's called ziva, a flow. She is now a zava. She is a woman who has had a flow that's not her period. Her period is called Nida. Nida is the normal menstruation. Any flow that she's going to have outside of the normal time, she should expect it. So for the first 11 days after her period, those are 11 days of Ziva. 11 days where I say that's a flow. Meaning, let's say she had her period now, Aleph Iyar. And then Zayin Iyar, she comes clean. Ches Iyar, she's in mikveh and she's pure. Ches Iyar, she has 11 days. Ches through Yod Tes, the 8th of Iyar, through the 19th. She has 11 days during which we say if she'll have any spotting, that's Ziva, that's a flow. It's a different Tumah. In a minute, we'll get back to what type of Tumah that is. After 19 days, meaning 7 days for the period, 11 days during which we say that's called having a flow, after she's passed those 19 days, 19th into the month, come the 20th of the month, she has spotting, we say, that's your period again. She says, wait, but I get my period on the first of the month. For 30 years I've been getting my period on the first of the month. We say, no. After those 11 days pass, the spotting that she has on day 19, that spotting becomes Nida. Now remember, she just saw a spot. She felt something, a spot came out. She looks, says, it's just a spot, Rabbi. We say, okay. How long am I defiled for? Biblically, 7 days. But I'm not going to see 7 days. I'm going to see in. Remember, she saw now on the 19th. She saw a spot. She says, I'm going to see in 11 days. On the 30th, I'm going to see my full-fledged period. We say, no, no, no. Your period is now. That's what the Torah says. You have 7 days of the period, and then 11 days during which we'll call it spotting, ziva, other flow. If you're going to see spotting after those 11 days, then your period's just started again. So now comes day 20, and she sees spotting. She sees a little bit of blood. We say, okay, you're defiled for 7 days. In 7 days, go to mikveh. Now do the math. What's going to happen next? Her whole period is going to come during the period when it's time that it's a flow. It's not really her period. You can see that what we view as the period could easily become, halachically, not the period, but rather the flow that's out of time. You guys follow that? With one spot, or not exactly one spot, but that with one spot it could all change. Yeah, with one spot. One spot that you'll see at day 20. So now let's reverse and we'll come back to this point. The Torah says that if she has spotting during those 11 days, so if she had a spot one day, you say, okay, take one day, show that you're clean, go to mikveh, fine. That one day she checks herself, she makes sure she's clean, fine. But what happens when she has 3 days straight? Then the Torah says she has to have 7 clean days. Which means for 7 days, every morning and every night, she checks herself and she makes sure she's not staining. She wears white underwear or a white garment to ensure that any spot that comes out, she'll see. Yeah?
I thought every spot you have to check when you're out.
Wait. We're talking about the Torah. We're not yet talking practical halacha today. We're introducing where the halacha today came from.
You're
right. I should have explained. Buzz, you're 100%. Buzz, you're 100%. I'm just explaining the background to the halacha today. We could have just started with practical halacha, but I assume you guys want to understand more than that. This is a parsha shir. It's not a practical family purity class. Okay. So again, what I'm saying here has no relevance to today. It's just the background to what we do today, so that we understand how we got to where we are today. If she had 3 days straight, the Torah says she has to have 7 days where she's clean. 7 days where she checks herself and sees that she's clean. Now we just explained that the 7 days of her period could easily become the days of when we say that's her flow, and not her period, her ziva, right? So because Chazal saw that it's very hard for people to keep track this way or that way, Chazal made an institution, and this is halacha already for 2,000 years, and there's no changing it. That the second a woman has a little bit of blood, the second a woman has even some kind of spotting, she has to verify if that defiles her or not. We can't go into all the halachs of when it defiles her and when not. But if it defiles her, so then she has to take 7 days. Even though technically, biblically, we said you could have 7 days where she's seeing blood and then at the very end she goes to mikveh, right? But we also explained how it could very easily switch. Where at the end of those 7 days, she needs another 7 clean days. So Chazal, the women of Israel, took upon themselves, and Chazal approved it. It started off that the women said, from now on, we accept on ourselves that any spotting that a woman sees, she must wait 7 days in which she's clean. Not going with the biblical. This is rabbinic, but it's rabbinic that the women accepted upon themselves, and it's been this way from the time of the Mishnah. Practically today, and then we'll have to go through our parsha. Practically today, anytime a woman sees her period or sees any spotting, she has to verify if it defiles her. Part of the training that a rabbi has is to discern what is blood and what isn't blood. When a woman checks herself with a cloth, so then sometimes she'll see, okay, that's red, that's blood, that's clear. And sometimes she'll see, okay, it's white, there was no blood, that's clear. And then very often she's going to look at the cloth and she'll look at it and say, what's that? I don't know. So part of the training that a rabbi gets, rabbi who's gotten this training, is that we learn colors. Spend a lot of time learning the colors, learning and understanding which colors come from blood and which aren't. If a woman is embarrassed to show it to a rabbi, usually she sends her husband. And if the husband is embarrassed, so you can make up with the rabbi, they leave an envelope in the mailbox. In my mailbox, I mean, we get envelopes slipped under the door and in the mailbox all the time. And if you don't want to go to a rabbi that you know, so then there are organizations like Machon Pua, where you could leave an envelope and a phone number and you can work it out with them and they'll call you back. They'll give you an answer and you don't have to work with someone you know. People sometimes are uncomfortable working with the rabbi of their community, so very often they'll go to the next community over. They'll call up and say, can I leave you an envelope? I have a question, is this pure, is this not? But guys, you the husbands, it's your jobs. Every woman of Israel, from the moment she sees spotting, or from the moment that the couple is defiled, until 12 days later minimum. Remember, a woman's average period is going to be 5, 6, 7 days. And even if it isn't, we say she has to wait 5 days before she can start her 7 clean days. So every couple is going to have 12 days minimum a month, usually it's more like 13 days, where they are prohibited. What does it mean they are prohibited? So it means that they can't have relations. And after she's completely clean, she does a check to make sure she's completely clean. And then the next day, for the next 7 days, she's going to do 2 checks a day to make sure she's clean, one in the morning, one at night. We're not going into all the laws. You guys will learn it when you're chatanim. For those 12 days, the couple have to maintain a certain distance. They still love one another, but being that intercourse is prohibited, also all shows of intimate affection are prohibited, which includes they're not allowed to touch. They're not allowed to lie down on the same bed. They're not allowed to touch through their clothing. So they can't sit on a bus sitting together. If they're going to sit on a bus together, they should put a knapsack between them or something. They shouldn't come to bump into one another. The couple doesn't pass things from hand to hand. Meaning you end up in a situation where the woman at the checkout counter, you could pass her your change, but your wife, you can't. You know, when you want to pass something to your wife during this period that a couple is prohibited, you put it down and she picks it up. The couple... we said they don't lie down on the same bed. They don't say things of intimacy either. We do all things to ensure that we won't come to transgressing this. And Chazal say that the nations used to look at us and say, they're not really sticking to it. They don't really do it. Who knows what's going on in a person's house? Like one of the early Christians asked one of the rabbis, he said, if I told you that you have a furnace with a burning fire and you put in a little bit of wool and the wool doesn't get scorched, would you believe me? So the rabbi says, of course not. So he says, then how do you believe that a man and a woman are in a house and there's burning passion in their hearts and no fire gets burnt between them? So the rabbi told him, it says in the Song of Songs, God says about the Jewish people, they are suga, they are fenced by shoshanim. With shoshanim are roses. You ever see someone make a fence of roses? It's not going to keep anyone out. Anyone can leap over the flowers. God said, I testify about my people that even though I just said so, and no one knows what's going on in a Jew's home, no one knows whether you're keeping these laws or not, my people, they keep them. And one of the things that you guys will see Be'ezrat Hashem after you get married is how difficult emotionally it is to keep these halachot. And when a person stands up to the test and lives up to it, he steps back and says, I have new respect for my people. Because no one else in the world will do this. Think about it. A guy just gets married. The couple are together the first night. If she was a virgin, then that first night, they're going to become prohibited. So here they were, the whole dating period, they were careful, nagia, they didn't touch one another. They had 3 hours after the wedding to be together, and then after the first time they were together intimately, they're prohibited for 12 days. Who's going to do that? Every one of us. It's not easy. No one's saying it's easy. And the first time she has her period and the second time, it's not easy. 12 days, think every Jewish couple in Israel, unless she's pregnant, then she doesn't have a period or she's nursing. But most of the time, so if you're one of those couples that have 15 kids, so you spend most of married life being permitted. You know, either she's pregnant or she's nursing. So they're permitted. They don't have a problem. But if it's a couple that has one kid or two kids or three kids, so then for most of their married life, they're going to spend half of each month almost not touching. So the Gemara looks at it and the Gemara says, what's going on here? And the Gemara tells us a fantastic thought, which modern psychologists have come up with the same thought. Rabbi Meir says in the Talmud in Nida, Rabbi Meir says, why did the Torah tell us that we have to separate from our wives for a week? Remember, biblically it's a week. It's only rabbinically that's 2 weeks. Because the nature of the man is that he becomes accustomed to his wife. Like guys asked me once in a class, they said, how could you be a monogamist? Don't you want variety in life? No, guys asked me this a half year ago. Not here, in a different place. So the nature of the male is that he does. The nature of a man is that he does want variety. Tells us Rabbi Meir, why did the Torah tell us to separate from our wives? Because the nature of the man is that he gets accustomed to his wife and he gets disgusted with her. He gets tired of her. Notice, the women don't have this problem. It's only us. Said the Torah, let her be defiled for 7 days. Because after 7 days, you have a rejuvenation of the marriage. The husband and wife reunite and they have a new honeymoon. It's like he's gotten a fresh wife coming straight out of the chuppah. This psychologist who tried researching why the Jewish home has outlasted other homes, one of the major conclusions they've come to is that the laws of family purity have actually strengthened the bond. To have a connection with a person of the opposite gender where you take 2 weeks out of each month and you don't touch. 2 weeks out of each month and the connection does not revolve around anything physical. It develops a totally different connection. Now, if anyone thinks that they're going to keep the laws of family purity because of that, they're kidding themselves. The only reason that a person will stand up to these laws if he's a God-fearing Jew, the Torah says so. We can appreciate the byproducts. But the only person who's going to really live up to these laws is a person who understands this is what Hashem said. We can't understand why it's good for us. We can glean some of the wisdom. But we have to understand we don't know why. The Torah said this is what we do. And that's the only way a person's going to live up to it. These are one of the hardest halachot to keep. But you'll be surprised at how tremendous Am Yisrael is. People who are lenient in all kinds of other areas, when it comes to this, throughout Am Yisrael, and I can tell you, I get questions from people who don't wear a kippah. You know, you look at them in the street, and you think, what mitzvah is that guy keeping? He's not even wearing a kippah. He makes his blessings without a kippah. But the laws of family purity, many, many, many people keep. And every observant Jew is that this is one of the mitzvot every person is supposed to keep. We spent more time than I expected on this, so if there are any very important questions, we'll take them, but otherwise we have a whole parsha other than this to cover. Yeah?
It was very important. I thought hymen blood doesn't make you impure, because it's not from the womb.
Technically it's not from the womb, but we've accepted upon ourselves that... When a person will be a chatan, he'll learn all the laws. But technically, just like the Torah says, after a woman gives birth to a child, the first 7 days, the blood defiles her. And after that, the next 33 days for a boy. Or the first 14 days, the blood defiles her for a girl. And then the next 66 days for a girl, she's pure even though she's seeing blood. Right? After childbirth, a woman sees blood for quite a while. Technically, biblically, Torah says she's pure. She could go to mikvah after 7 days for a boy or 14 days for a girl, and then even though she'll keep seeing blood, she's pure. But we've accepted on ourselves that any blood that a woman sees, including blood from the hymen, we treat it all the same and we apply the same 12 days, right? 5 days before she starts her check, and then 7 days of two checks every morning and every night. Get to 1 second, Adam? Yes. Eitan, right?
Joe.
Oh, I'll get there.
I guess part of honoring Shabbat and honoring Yom Tov is buying the wedding present. Or flowers or something like that. Which overrides in the case of Nida.
So a husband is allowed to buy his wife a gift when she's a Nida. We don't go, let's say, on an outing. A couple wouldn't go they wouldn't plan their honeymoon for then. That's why Jewish couples don't go on honeymoon, because after the hymen, I mean, they're defiled. If a guy is a chozer b'tshuva and she's a chozeret b'tshuva, she's not a virgin, so then technically they could go on honeymoon, but they shouldn't publicize it because no one else understands that. A guy is not supposed to show affection that is indicative of intimacy. Other affection is permitted, and not only permitted, but obligatory. The Talmud says when the couple goes to sleep, ordinarily they have their own talk. We're not talking about intimate talk in a way that leads to intimate actions. But there is conversation which is just between them. And the Talmud says, cursed is a person, even if you need a place to stay. Let's say a person asks a couple, can I stay in your room for the night? And the couple is obviously prohibited, right? You've seen them. You're at the shop still, and you see every time they pass things, they put it down. And you have a bar mitzvah in the family. So there's a shortage of room. Everyone's sleeping in the living room, dining room, under the chairs, over the tables, right? There's a shortage of room. And the couple says, you can sleep in our room, no problem. So, right, you'll notice their beds are separate, because the beds can't be touching. They have to be separate, obviously separated. And they don't mind, right? Talmud says, cursed is a person who does that. Why? Because even a couple that's biblically prohibited, they're not touching, the beds are separate, they can't even talk that would lead to intimacy. But the conversation that they have at night in the bedroom is supposed to be a conversation of closeness, a different type of closeness. And when someone else is around, they're not going to have that. So you see how the Talmud viewed the relationship they're going to have, even when they're prohibited. There has to be. The affection doesn't leave. The way we express it is different. And buying flowers would be perfect. No reason not to. Yes?
So what's the status if you get blood from not the womb or not in there, or just, say, like, you know, go to shave or something down there, they cut themselves. Not necessarily inside or whatever, I don't know. Like, what's the status? Where do you draw that?
Technically, anything that's obviously external, like a girl that cuts herself externally, it's not a problem. The questions are more when women do checks like a pap smear, where the doctor sticks in and basically scrapes off her womb a little bit to get a sample to check that, right? So there, each person will consult with his local Orthodox rabbi. In many instances, you're right. There can be many instances where the couple will still be permitted. You will notice that I consistently speak about the couple being permitted. A nice husband does not talk to his wife, you're a nida, you're pure, you're defiled, you're this, you're that. We as a couple are either permitted or prohibited. It's a nicer way to look at it. Okay, now let's... Yes?
I just want one quick question. This is maybe a little dumb, but like, when she's a nida, she defiles things that she touches, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, if she's... the things that she touches, is that off limits now? I mean, like, what does that mean?
In the days of the temple, when a woman was a nida, so she had the vessels that she used.
Yeah.
And she even had her own bed, because the bed she slept on was defiled. And because everyone was living on such a level of purity,
yeah,
everyone knew which woman was a nida and which wasn't.
Yeah.
And it was like part of the way of life. And when she'd go to mikvah, she'd take the nursing babies with her, because they were defiled, they were with her. And she'd take her bed with her, unless she was wealthy enough to afford two beds, one for when she was defiled and one not. And that's why the wealthy people had a mikvah in-house. You know, in archaeology we find that a lot of the wealthy people had a mikvah in their own home, because, you know, every month the woman's going to start schlepping with her this kid and that kid, and that's not so easy. The poorer people, so they'd go to the mikvah with the vessels that she used. And either if they were on a lower level, the lower level couples, so all their vessels were always defiled. That's why the Am Haaretz, Chazal said, everything he touches, he's tameh, his wife's tameh, everything they touch is tameh, because it's very hard to live up on that standard. The people who were very learned and could maintain this standard, so then either they would have a separate room where she'd keep the vessels that were defiled, or they would take the stuff to dunk.
What about today?
the next temple, everyone's going to have to take their prosthopedics to the mikvah? Come on.
It's a good question. Maybe they'll have to have two.
Wouldn't fit.
Yeah.
And today,
today, none of this is relevant. Today, everything we have is tamei. We don't. That's what I'm saying. It's not. It doesn't. It doesn't apply. You know, all our vessels are tamei, and everything. We're all tamei. The Torah says there's a separate prohibition of having relations, of having intimacy, aside from the tumah. As far as the tumah vis-a-vis everything we touch, what can we do? Everything we have is tamei. That's why Chazal said, a woman who is a nida still does everything for her husband. She still prepares the food. She still does the laundry. She doesn't say, well, hey, honey, you don't want your laundry all tamei. You do your laundry. You don't want your food all tamei. You cook the food for Shabbos, right? No. We say that a woman that's a nida does everything just like regular.
So the whole purpose is not to have contact and it's just...
That pertains to intimacy.
Yeah.
I mean, even when they serve one another, so they don't put it directly in front of one another. They do some kind of change. If she's going to serve her husband the meal, so she'll put the plate a little further away so he has to bring it in front of him. She won't pour him a cup of wine. He won't pour her a cup of wine because that's a show of intimacy. That's something that usually leads into more intimate things. But that's all. It all revolves around intimacy. It's not because of the tum'ah. Okay, yes.
Dunked the baby?
Babies do take baths also. I mean, it's one split second when the baby's underwater.
The other thing...
just one more point I forgot to mention, I'm sorry. It just reminded me. A woman that had her period is tamei and biblically prohibited to have relations with a man for her whole life until she does this process of becoming tahor. Meaning, let's say a girl had her period at 13, and then she decided, I don't like this, I'm taking birth control. Takes the pill for the next 30 years, never has a period again. She's ruining her body. That's a very bad idea. I mean, every year or two I get a phone call from a guy who tells me, just found out that my wife spent her whole teenage years on the pill and she hasn't had a period in about 7 years. What am I supposed to do now? It's a big problem. You know, women really hurt their body by doing that. But what we have to know for ourselves is that from the minute a woman had her period, from the minute she saw a little bit of blood, doesn't even have to be a full period, she is tamei and biblically prohibited to touch or have relations with, same prohibition, until she does the process of checking herself once, and then for the next 7 days, every morning and every night, and then going to mikvah. Doesn't matter how many years passed. That's something we have to know. People sometimes say, she hadn't had a period in 2 years. Okay, but did she go to mikvah or not? And in order to prevent prostitution and improper behavior, Chazal forbade women who were single from going to mikvah. A single woman is not allowed to go to a mikvah. Technically, you'll say, well, wait a second, if she is doing improper things, wouldn't it be better she should go to mikvah than she and the man have this biblical provision where the Torah says he who transgresses it will die young and his children will die young for generations to come? It's pretty heavy. Wouldn't it be better she go to mikvah? Chazal said, no, if we open this gate, then girls will go to mikvah. And you know what's going to happen. So Chazal said, no going to mikvah. Now another point we have to know, if a Jewish woman is married to a non-Jewish man, she still must maintain the laws of family purity. She's doing one prohibition, being married to him, but there's this totally separate prohibition, even with a non-Jewish man, every time she doesn't go to mikvah and has relations with him. That's just something people sometimes don't think about. It's like its own point. Yeah?
So
none of this should ever be relevant to us, but you know, if we're learning the law, we got to touch on this. Yeah?
Husband doesn't have to avoid yesterday.
The Torah says that a husband whose wife is a nida is allowed to be alone with her, provided, says the Gemara, provided that they were together once intimately. Meaning, if a chassan gets married and at the wedding his wife is a nida, so then they got a problem. They got to consult with the rabbi what they're going to do. We say once a couple was together intimately once, from then onward he's trusted by the Torah that nothing improper is going to happen. But let's say they get married and then she had her period 3 days ago. She's defiled at the wedding. That's called the chupat nida. So then we say that the couple should, he should sleep with a friend and she should sleep with a girlfriend. Which usually what you do is you take a...
Houses?
it could be different houses, or it could be different rooms that he's with a friend who watches him and she's with a friend that watches her. What we usually do in such instances, when we were a young couple, we did this a lot, is that the chassan and kala go to a friend's house, and that young couple, the husband sleeps with the chassan and the wife sleeps with the kala. No one else has to know. It's no one's business. Her parents don't have to know. His parents don't have to know. It's no one's business whether she's having her period or not.
Can you just like rent a 7-year-old or something?
So each person, when it will be relevant, will ask the local Orthodox rabbi what leniencies they could apply. The simplest way is to have like we did when we were a young couple. So we decorate the whole house and we prepare cookies and cake and coffee and whatever. And the young couple would come, and then the husband would sleep with me in one room, and the wife would sleep with my wife in a different room. That's the simplest way. But nowadays it happens, let's say, 10% of the weddings. Because 99% of the girls take the pill to make sure they're not going to have the period and this shouldn't happen. I don't recommend that, but most other rabbis do. So 99% of the girls are making sure that this doesn't happen to them. Even though 99% of the girls are making sure, in spite of that 10% it happens to. Even with the pill, 10% of the girls end up coming to the wedding and eat it. 1 out of 10. And then each person has to consult with his local Orthodox rabbi how what the practical, what halacha allows us to do. The first thing to do is cheer up your kala. It's not so bad. We'll have some time together calmly before... etc. Yeah. The Gemara says we don't trust them. Right? We trust them after they've been together once. But before that, we say, not.
How do you establish that they've been together?
That's their business. No one knows the laws of family purity that you keep. No one's looking over your shoulder. This is all about you and her being God fearing Jews. No one knows. No one's going to know. This is one of the areas in halacha where a person has a tremendous yetzer hara. No one's going to know if he keeps it or not. And it's a check of how God-fearing a person is. My father always says, the only person who knows how God-fearing a person really is his wife. Everything else you can play with. Your wife knows the truth. Okay, so we have a little bit of time. Let's... review the rest of the parasha. Believe it or not, the parasha discusses other things too. So we have the laws of a woman giving birth. And after a woman gives birth, so then we're going back to the beginning of Parashas Tezriah. After a woman gives birth, so then the Torah says, automatically, she's tameh for 7 days or 14 days, depending if it was a boy or a girl, irrespective of whether she's going to see blood. Sometimes a woman can give birth and she won't see blood. Now, what we need to know from this is that sometimes a woman miscarries. A woman can sometimes miscarry, and then she won't see a lot of blood. So, I wish you guys that none of your wives miscarry. But modern medicine says statistically 1 in 4 pregnancies end in a miscarriage. So it's not such an uncommon thing. So what we have to know is that even if the woman sees no blood, let's say she stops bleeding after a day. She miscarries and she stops seeing blood after a day. You have to ask your local Orthodox rabbi, but it could be that you have to wait 14 days before you can do the procedure. You know, the Torah says, biblically, after a boy, a woman is defiled for 7 days, after a girl, 14 days, and only afterwards can she go to mikveh, and then technically, biblically, she is pure for the next 33 days for a boy, or 66 days for a girl, and then she brings a sacrifice, and she becomes pure. The Torah tells us she brings a chata sacrifice. What sin has she performed in having a child? She hasn't done any sin. But Chazal understood that when a woman is in the pain of delivery, so then it's normal for her to really be upset. And she says, I'm never doing this again. God knows that, being that she really took this vow, I'm never gonna be with my husband intimately. And she knows that one of the obligations of marriage is that the couple is gonna live intimately together. The husband's obligated to his wife, she's obligated to him. It's part of marriage. So Hashem said, in order to keep her in her righteous state, I will give her a capacity to bring the sacrifice without explaining why. She doesn't have to explain to anyone what she said, what she didn't say. She just brings the sacrifice. And here we learn a very important point. You know, sometimes One of the main complaints that husbands have against their wives is, she goes off the handle. When she's upset at me, she can tell me things like, I'd never speak to anyone that way. Right? I hate you. I wish we were never married. She could say things, and I'm saying the nice things. So the Torah teaches us that a woman in pain, or any person in pain, can say things that they don't really mean. And you see that Hashem says after a period of time, you give her time to cool off. The Torah doesn't say she brings the sacrifice a day after childbirth, and not even 7 days, but at least 40 days afterwards. Gives her time, she cools off, and by then God says, I know she didn't mean it. I know she doesn't want it. Without mentioning the sin, she brings her sacrifice. The Torah then goes into the laws of tzaras. Tzaras is technically white blemishes that are from the white of the egg. You know, from that type of white upward, more white than that. We have different traditions as to exactly the different types of white. White as seed, white as snow. There are different white as white wool. The Talmud goes into the different types of white that would constitute a negat tzaras. A kohen has to have tradition on it. And when a kohen sees it, so he declares it as tzaras. Tzaras, according to some, is an acronym for motzi shem ra. Tzaras is like motzi ra, he who has emitted bad. Chazal tell us that tzaras comes on a person, there's an order. Hashem first sends tzaras to his home, then to his garment. And if he doesn't get the hint that he has to do tshuva, then Hashem sends it in his body. When a person has tzaras, we said he leaves the camp, he might even have to leave his wife, he's all alone, he covers himself, covers his face all the way down, you know, like the Arabs do. With only the slit of the eyes showing, and he tears his garments, and he calls out, stay away, I'm defiled. He's not going to have a lot of buddies that way, right? Chazal say, well, tzaras comes, because someone said Lashon Hara. He caused divisiveness among God's people. So if he caused divisiveness, Hashem says, I'll put him out alone until he does tshuva. The Rambam says we have two mitzvahs in the Torah that are miraculous. The two mitzvahs are tzaras and sota. Sota we'll learn about Bezrat Shem towards the end of the semester. Tzaras is this white blemish. We're not talking about some kind of medical illness, even though technically it appears in the skin. It seems to be medical. We have on tradition that this appears as a reaction to certain sins. If a person was stingy, his neighbors asked him to borrow his hammer. He says, I don't have a hammer now. I don't have a hammer. I don't have a saw. He's stingy, he doesn't want to lend his things. So God sends a blemish in the home. And then part of what happens when there's a blemish in the home is that we take all the vessels out of the home. His neighbors start saying, oh, nice hammer you got there. Suddenly he's showing everyone everything he's got. Hashem, in everything Hashem does, he pays us back midah keneged midah. The way we behave with others, Hashem behaves with us. And it's educational. We'll just end off with one point. Tzaras cannot apply to a non-Jew. A non-Jew cannot have tzaras in his home, in his garment, and his body. It's a special thing that Hashem gave us. Because Hashem loves us, Hashem keeps a closer eye on us. That's what's called Ashgachat Pratit. Hashem looks at each of us individually. When we lost that great level of being where Hashem wants us to be, so we also lost this gift. You don't find a person says Lashon Hara today and suddenly has a white blemish on his forehead. It doesn't happen. Because we're not on the level. We don't deserve it. Very often things that seem rough to us are really a gift in disguise. It's like the parent who, when his neighbor's kid is coloring on the walls in the hall, figures, okay, it's his boy, what am I going to do? When it's his own kid, then he's going to give him over the head. What's wrong with you? What are you doing? So too Hashem gave us this mitzvah of tzaras, where Hashem, so to speak, he says, hey, you're my boys. If you're going to do things that are improper, I'm going to react. And that's why tzaras is only relevant in the land of Israel. A home in Chutz Laretz can't have tzaras. There's a whole Maseches Negoim. There's a whole tractate about the laws of tzaras. But we touched on it a little bit today. If you wish, previous years we probably went into more detail about tzaras. So you could catch the classes online on TorahForMe.org. So over there we have previous years' classes. But today we focused more on the laws of family purity. Once a year we try to have this quick class that goes over the laws of family purity. So we should just know a little bit of what we're headed towards. Everyone that's going to Bezrat Hashem get engaged should be in touch with the rabbi and get personal classes in preparation for the wedding to learn with detail the laws of family purity. We really did a very quick overview here. It's not enough. You got to learn all the laws. You got to understand it. We didn't go into great detail. So Be'ezrat Hashem, we should see you guys under the chuppah at the right time. But when the right time comes, it should be quick.